the Southeast Climate Consortium is a it's grown over time. It has evolved. It started with a relatively simple concept that there's an ability to forecast climate in the Southeast based on El Nino Southern Oscillation Phase, and you'll hear about that several times during the morning. And then we have had a significant amount of progress being made in crop simulation modeling. Let's see, where does it say? Show. View. That's a show? That's it? It should be. It should have a full screen. Where is that? That's what I'm looking for. I don't see it. There it is. Ah, there we go. There we go. So I've listed here not all the people who are involved with the Southeast Climate Consortium, but these are representatives from each of our institutions. In fact, I didn't even get all of them because we just added another one. We just added Clemson University to our group. So I'll tell you a little bit about the Southeast Climate Consortium, the keys to success for the Southeast Climate Consortium, and some of our future challenges. When we start a research project, we normally start with an objective. If you're trying to establish a program, which is comprised of many projects, it's important to have a mission statement, and that the more I work on with the mission statement, the more important I feel. It has evolved with time also. Our mission is to use advances in climate sciences, including forecasts, long-term climate change information. We want to provide the best, most scientifically sound information possible, along with the support to use that information to people who can make better decisions. For our case, mostly farmers and water resource managers, but we're also looking at other decision makers. Now we're looking at the coastal ecosystems, other terrestrial ecosystems, including forests and wildlife. The key here is we are multidisciplinary, multi-institutional, and we try to bring together the best of all of the institutions that we have in the SECC. And we try to provide information to a broad community of users. But the key there is that we have to work with boundary organizations. And I'll talk about boundary organizations several times. Most of you have an intuitive idea of a boundary organization, even if you've never heard the term. All you have to think of is Extension Services. They are a boundary organization. They take research and work with research to get information so that it can be applied on the farm. So our guiding principles have been several, and as I think through the list, we keep adding more to this. One is to emphasize collaboration. It's essential. We collaborate across institutions, across disciplines. We have when we talk about multidisciplinary activities, we include physical, biological, and social sciences. We have social sciences scientists who help us understand what people need. They help us evaluate the products that we put together, and they do their own research on how people make decisions and how they understand what we tell them. The partnership that we have with Extension is essential, and we're developing partnerships with other boundary organizations that have their mission to get information out to users. And we try to involve the end users from the very beginning. We find it essential to be publishing both in popular and scientific journals. We do a lot of work. A lot of my job is to keep our program managers informed, keep our administrators informed. At a program level, we depend on support from our program managers and administrators. We disseminate only probabilistic forecasts. There are a lot of people who say, well, what if a forecast is wrong? Well, a probabilistic forecast is never wrong because it tells you what the likely outcome is. And as I said, I keep thinking of principles that I forget to put on my list. One of them is that we focus on the local level. We try to provide information at the level that people use it. For Extension, it's been mainly the county level. We also do some at the regional level, but it's really important to provide information at the level where people can use it. A lot of what we have done is to develop decision support systems, and the next paper will describe the first and probably the not just the first decision support system of the Southeast Climate Consortium, but the first one in the world. It's held up as a shining example of how to get climate information out to people who can use it. So they start with a conceptual prototype. They collect data. They engage stakeholders, find out how users can, what their needs are for information. And after we get this conceptual prototype, we have a prototype ready for testing. And that was first started back in about 2004 with AgClimate. And it had a design, got a lot of feedback from users, assessment. There's a lot of interaction there as users say, we like this, but what about this? And I'll let you let Clyde tell you about some of the information that they've developed in response to user feedback. The next step is one we're getting close to the end of right now. We're transitioning this, making a transition from being a research prototype to an operational product, which is now managed by the Extension Services. AgroClimate is hosted by the Florida Extension Services, still with a lot of user feedback and impact assessment. And then the third or the fourth step will be the third paper, trying to get an open source. It's important to have a sustainable product. And that's for us, that means that we have to have the users that can take that, have boundary organizations that are deploying the decision support system. And at that point, the science community becomes supportive. We still provide new tools, new information. We help update databases. But and we're trying to make it open source so that we can get a broader community of scientists engaged in the development and support process. So here's what AgroClimate looks like now. It's gone through a lot of iterations. I'm not going to talk about that because Clyde will. We have a lot of tools in here. Here's one tool that's under development, which is shows the monitoring of a drought index over the previous 30 days and the probable track of that index based on ENSO phase over the next 30 days. Most of the Southeast Climate Consortium work to date has been on climate variability. What's going to happen over the next season? Climate change has really posed a challenge for us because when we first started, a lot of the farmers that we worked with were very skeptical about climate change. Many still are. Many scientists, believe it or not, are still skeptical about science or climate change. But at the same time, we get a lot of people now who are asking us for information. We need to provide information that they can use. Of course, the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, has produced these wonderful assessment reports at the global level. For them, a region is a continent. They have very little capacity to downscale and let us know what's going to happen in my county, even in my state, okay? Even my region, it's hard to say. So we're working very hard to downscale IPCC projections. IPCC has focused on 50 and 100 year forecasts. And the people that we talk with, well, they want to know what's going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years or 30 years. And we want to make sure that we have sound science. For us, the other challenge is that we get a range of people asking for information that's growing in diversity, not just agriculture, but water and water resource managers. We get community developers, environmental engineers. There's just an incredible array of people who want to know about climate change. And the other challenge from that diversity is trying to avoid polarization. There are a lot of people who are either deniers or you have these two sides that have come up. Actually, there are six sides that some people describe based on the degree of acceptance or rejection of climate change. And we need to be able to provide information for all of them that's unbiased and based on the data. Now, one of the challenges that we find is that people talk about climate change, they talk about global warming. And historically, in Florida and Georgia, there has not been any global warming at a state level. If we look at a rural weather station, we see some friends here that are kind of unusual. This one seems to increase over the first part of the century, then there's a decrease and a slight increase. Overall, the trend is downward over the last 100 years. For a more urban station, the trend has been definitely an increase. And we feel that there's a very strong land use component here that people need to be paying attention to. And we're not. In the Southeast, we have some of the fastest, I think 8 of the 10 fastest growing counties in the U.S. are in the Southeast. And that's mostly sprawl. And that means that we're getting more and more counties that are going to be looking like this. Sea level rise is a big concern in the Southeast, especially in Florida, where historically we've had about almost 9 inches over the last century. There's a lot of concern about what's going to happen in the future. And the challenge is nobody really knows. This is a graph that was developed from data that were produced by the EPA in 1990, and it shows the probability of sea level rise. And it shows that about a 50% level, it's somewhere around 30 millimeters. That's not right. That may be centimeters. I'm not sure. I think that's got to be centimeters. Anyway, so it's going to be about a little over a foot at the 50% level. We know for sure it's probably not going to decrease, although that probably did exist early on. But we can see that this is old data, and we don't have new data. We don't have anything that's been developed like this. And it's our challenge right now to develop this kind of data for our region. These are some of the attitudes on climate change. Some people are alarmed, cautious, and you see these groups are about equally split, and trying to provide information for all of them is really something that we're trying to do with our best, and it's hard. It is really not easy at all. Fortunately, we have enough diversity within our own group that we hear all sides of the story. We also have climate change opportunities, and learning from seasonal climate variability is a message that Clyde has been promoting for a long time. We know how to look at seasonal climate variability. Let's take that same approach for climate change. Biofuels are a big opportunity. There's a lot of question about whether or not they're actually going to help us mitigate or adapt to climate change, but at least for agriculture, they're an opportunity to get new markets. Carbon sequestration, also an opportunity for new markets. Mostly a challenge right now is getting good aggregation systems out there for farmers. And in the Southeast, we're not nearly as well developed as other areas. There's a lot of questions still about how we participate in carbon markets. Carbon footprint analysis is one of the things that a lot of our agricultural stakeholders are looking for. They want to use it in marketing. They want to be able to advertise their commodities as being local and less carbon intensive than products that are shipped in from California. And they're also interested in carbon trading. And as we started trying to respond to all of these things, we decided we needed to reorganize ourselves. And this is where we are right now. We're looking at trying to meet the needs of 3 adaptation sectors: coastal, agricultural, and other terrestrial ecosystems. And we have 4 natural resources sciences: climate sciences, water sciences, land, and energy. And then we have 3 application sciences: integrated systems and analysis, human dimensions, which includes both economic policy as well as assessment and evaluation, and then extension and outreach. And they all have to work together. The reason we have this kind of a structure is because we want to see all components interacting. And I'm going to leave it right at there because I think I'm about out of time. Let's see if there are any questions.
Any questions from you? We've got time for a couple questions.
If not, I have about 50 more slides.
Thank you. Okay. Well,
thanks, Keith, for this excellent overview of the SECC. In fact, you will say I can save some time of my presentation, and I think that's really good because I have too many slides. But I'm going to follow Keith as a second presenter today, and